following is a paid presentation.
Welcome to University Hospital's HealthLink on Air.
Your weekly dose of health and medical headlines.
Great interviews with professionals in the field.
Topics that address your interests.
Tips for taking care of yourself and more. Here is your host, Tricia Torrey.
Every patient's advocate on 570 WSYR.
Well, good morning and welcome to HealthLink on Air on this spring break Sunday, when we've actually had some spring to celebrate this week. HealthLink on Air is produced each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. And this is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate, here to bring you your weekly dose of health and medical information. Well, spring has sprung. Yes, I know it's a bit cooler than it was last week, but I was so happy to see crocus and daffodils peeking through the garden this week. I hope you're enjoying these first few days of spring, too. We'll be bringing you two different kinds of conversations this morning. We'll begin with an encore presentation of a conversation with Dr. Robert Olick, JD and PhD, from SUNY Upstate's Center for Bioethics and Humanities. This is a conversation about advanced directives, helping your loved ones understand your wishes for end-of-life care. We're bringing you the conversation because this coming Wednesday, April 16th, is National Healthcare Decisions Day, a day to raise awareness, an important conversation. Then we'll switch gears to talk about some fascinating history of SUNY Upstate. It relates to the upcoming Baldwin Cultural Crawl to benefit the Carol M. Baldwin Breast Cancer Research Fund. Elise Calvi, the curator of historical collections at SUNY Upstate, is going to tell us about recent discoveries of very old photos, their relationship to the Medical College's class of 1885, and a mystery that surrounds them. If you enjoy history and medicine, you'll be fascinated. Later, we'll be joined by one of your favorites. Dr. Rich O'Neill will bring us his checkup from the neck up. We do have a busy morning, so let's get started. As we like to do each Sunday morning, let's begin with news and views.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case loving you. No pills gonna cure my ill. I got a bad case loving you.
Well, an article in the New York Times from just a few weeks ago caught our eye. We thought you might be interested, too. It tells the story of three teenagers, all of whom resided in Nantucket, Massachusetts, and all of whom committed suicide within the span of a year. The first, a 15-year-old boy, took his own life in February of 2007. The next, last October, an A student and athlete was 17, and the third was 16, died in January of this year. None were good friends, although they did know each other. Now, as you know, mental health and physical health are tied closely together. Knowing that, and knowing that teen suicide is a problem across the country, we've asked Dr. Robert Gregory, associate professor of psychiatry at SUNY Upstate, to help us go behind this headline about teen suicide. Good morning, Dr. Gregory.
Good morning.
Now, you were just here recently. We talked about teen suicide in general. This seemed like a logical follow-up because I started reading about cluster suicides and other factors, and then this also seemed to be a story about the families and the friends who were left in the aftermath after these students committed suicide. Tell us, if you will, first of all, is there such a thing as cluster suicides?
Yes, it's not the most common form of suicide, but there is something called a contagion effect that is real, that occurs. Cluster suicides or contagion effect may be responsible for 5% of all suicides. And so you see sometimes, especially in teens and young adults, you see sometimes that in a small town or in a single school system where the children know one another, that one suicide can trigger another suicide. And so there's a lot of concern about the contagion effect. That's one reason that we don't have a lot of media reports about particular suicide deaths, because of that concern that might trigger other people who are on the edge.
Almost like a copycat effect.
Right, exactly.
Well, it raises the question, and this is actually what the article was about, is in this small town, after the first suicide, it was dealt in one way and a certain kind of expert was brought in. Mm-hmm. And then after the second one, it seemed like, well, maybe the first aftermath had not been successfully handled, so they brought in somebody with a different approach, and then that happened after the third. There must not be definitive ways then to help families and grieving friends after a young person commits suicide.
Yes, I, you know, and I think part of that is sometimes people label themselves as experts as well, and they have certain ideas without knowing necessarily all the research and methods in suicide prevention. And so it becomes, it can become confusing when a lot of self-proclaimed experts start start congregating in a community and giving advice as if it's gospel and as if they're very certain about what they're talking about. And but it's a complex issue, and there are certain things that need to be done. When you have five different experts giving five different opinions, that obviously isn't helpful to community.
Yeah, I would almost think it would be more harmful, because then people really don't know which person to believe.
Yes, and absolutely. So you have more confusion, you have increased distrust of the mental health system, and then you increase the risk for contagion effect too, as maybe the issue is overdeveloped and people are talking about suicide in a way that appears very dramatic, and you have the teens who ended their life getting all this media attention, and that may encourage other people on the edge to say, you know, I want to let my family know how much I'm hurting too, or my friends know, and then lead them over the edge.
You know, I remember when you and I talked just a week or two ago, we were talking about whether or not teens and young adults will try to commit suicide because it's an attention-getting device.
Yes.
It almost sounds to me like they're observing the attention somebody else is getting and therefore thinks that it's something they want to do, maybe not to call attention, but because it worked for them.
Yes, and I think I just have to rephrase the attention-seeking, because it's clearly not attention-seeking. Even if it's copycat suicide, it may be some unconscious anger that the student is holding that might lead them to give a message to people who they're angry at. It can't even be an ex-boyfriend or ex-girlfriend. You know, this will really show you how much you've hurt me.
Oh, yes.
Now, and, you know, I'm going to give you this guilt for the rest of your life by ending my life. So there can be a communication in that sense. But that's very different from attention seeking. It's very rare that people either self-harm or attempt suicide for attention per se. It does happen, but it's a very unusual cause of self-harm or suicide.
The professionals, and when I say the professionals, I would say clergy who work with family, I would say counselors in school districts, the people who do end up having conversations with the families who are left behind and the friends who are left behind.
Yes.
What do you think their approach needs to concentrate on to help the family get beyond and heal?
Well,
or the friends.
I actually do have a very specific recommendation in this regard, which is to contact the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention.
Uh-huh.
Because they sponsor what they call survivor groups in different parts of the country, and they have enormous experience helping parents who are grieving a loss and can really act as a resource, let them know what resources are available, who they feel are competent to provide that kind of support to families in this horribly tragic time.
So they know what works.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that sounds like an excellent resource. Well, Dr. Robert Gregory, you've been very helpful the last couple of weeks, and we thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. 8 out of 10, or congrats, you just graduated from doctor school, doctor. Kind of scary, isn't it, how long it takes to get an appointment to see a specialist now, and who knows about years from now. And worrisome, too, thinking about ending up in a nursing home, saying goodbye to our life savings that we're hoping to spend in Paris, Hawaii, China, or to send our grandkids to college. Now, if we want to stay out of the specialist's office and the nursing home and be playing bridge or golf at 80 instead, how are we going to do it? Of course, if we haven't had a physical recently, start there. But here's a fact that might be useful to add into our thinking. 8 out of 10 of the leading causes of death have a behavioral factor. That is, what we do or don't do plays a big role in heart disease, stroke, AIDS, diabetes, cancers, car accidents. So after our physical, let's schedule an office visit for a mental, a checkup from the neck up. But here's the trick. This checkup is with ourself, because we're the specialist on our own thinking and behavior, doctor. And we don't need to make ourselves wait a couple months for an appointment, and there's no copay, and we're going to discover we already know a lot about how to stay healthy and happy, because one of the two biggest contributors to unhappy is unhealthy. I'll tell you about the other one some other time. Stay tuned. But in our checkup from the neck up with ourselves, doctor, we got to get real and ask how come we're not doing what we know makes for healthy, then figure out how to do it. Heal thyself, doctor. For example, we got to figure out how to walk a little more, eat a little better, lower our stress level, and have some more fun with family and friends. We got to ask the tough questions like, is that double cheeseburger really worth a stay in the coronary care unit? Or would I rather spend that time playing golf? Is more status or money at work really a good trade for chuckles and hugs at home? Is that cigarette a good trade for our grandkids snuggled in our arms or watching them ride a bike or graduate high school? Is speeding down the highway to an accident and our own funeral a good swap for relaxing and enjoying the view along the way? And if those questions don't hit the mark, we got to craft some questions around what really matters for us. We're our own I do it or I don't do it, doctor. As we ask these questions, if our first thought is, I can't change that. No, the good thing about that hopeless thought is it lets us off the hook. And that's our first hurdle. Of course we can change, if we change what we do. So a good strategy there is to ask, am I willing to do the new do for golf, friends, grandkids? It takes some time and effort, but if and when we do the do, we can sing along with the doctor of Doobie Doobie Doo, Dr. Frank Sinatra. I did it my way. I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.